Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today, I'm joined by Scott Gingold, founder of Gingold Advisors, a trusted strategic counselor to family governed and privately held companies across the country. Over his four-decade career, Scott has launched and exited seven businesses, coached next-generation leaders, and advised owners through complex growth and succession challenges. What makes Scott's story unique is that he's lived nearly every role in the family business ecosystem. A child of one, a builder of several, and now advisor to many. His experiences offer lessons about communication leadership and the sometimes messy realities behind success in multi-generational enterprises. Scott, welcome to Growing Up B2B. Great to have you.
The pleasure is mine, Ed. Thanks so much for having me on today.
Awesome. Let's get right into it. Scott, you grew up in a family business that combined, I think it was like jewelry and real estate. Did I get that right?
My parents had jewelry stores and also a real estate business as well. Yes.
Okay. So talk a little bit about those early years. What did those early experiences or your early exposure to their businesses teach you about work, money, family?
I would say it's three quick things. Number one, communication is everything. If you don't have it, you will fail. Number two, if you're not rowing in the same direction, you will fail. And third, when you're in business, it's a full-time, full contact sport, and you're trying to create a better life for yourself and your family at the same time. And if you all don't buy into that vision here too, you're going to fail.
So talk about communication a little more. When you say communication, how do you see that? Expound on that if you would.
Well, in life in general, we tend to talk at each other instead of to each other. But in business, sometimes we become so focused on what we think is right or what the direction we should go that instead of listening to any and all family members that are actually involved in the day-to-day business, we get tone deaf to it. And that's what hurts our progress, if not frankly, kills the business.
Very good insight. So speaking of your parents, so they continue to work together even after their marriage ended, right, for a period of time. Again, looking back, witnessing that dynamic teach you about the importance of boundaries and respect inside a family company? Because clearly they were able to work together even beyond that, even if the marriage didn't continue, their working together did for some time.
It was an interesting dichotomy because they hated each other in so many different ways. They realized that for everyone's benefit, they needed to keep the business going until they could amicably separate that. Because if that failed, the marriage was a loss already. Now, if the business fails, then it's a financial loss that could derail everyone's future. So they had just enough emotional intelligence to realize they had to complete the mission and continue to work together until there could be an amicable separation of that as well.
That's great. And that situation does come up. And sometimes the parties can find a way forward and sometimes they can't. So you originally set out to work in emergency services. So you had some experience there. What lessons from that world have you carried over into how you lead and advise businesses today?
You have to be prepared for anything and everything, and you have to have backup plans always in mind. I was thinking about it, as recently as Monday this week with the AWS situation. It impacted me, impacted clients. Fortunately, I had the right backups in place, but many people don't. So when you're in emergency services, you're always thinking the next step. You're dealing with a situation at the moment, but you're thinking what's next. And many business owners are not in that mindset. They're living in the moment. And I'm not talking about forward planning, like marketing, like next year, what are we going to do, or branding, but just the what if scenarios. And first, being a first responder taught me you always have to be a step ahead in your mind. What could be next and how will we deal with it?
And we see that in our world too. In fact, I was just looking at some statistics. I think it was a McKinsey article that basically companies that wait, say, till 2026 to start planning for 2026, they're already going to be effectively 3 months behind. And on the basis of that 3 months behind, they're going to lose somewhere between 15 to 35% share of market. Just because if a competitor went prepared in advance, launched their initiatives come January and not April, they have another quarter in market to win share and to engage in businesses in a meaningful way. So it makes sense. However, more often than not, companies wait till the last minute or, you know.
Listen, in business, I always looked at it by September 1, this year's over. Mm-hmm. I'm already in 2020. I've been in 2026 for my business now since Labor Day, if not before.
That's a very healthy way to look at it. And I guess a follow-up question to that is, how do you get your clients to see the light and operate that way when there is that tendency to keep chasing 2025 until the bitter end and then, okay, let's focus on 26?
Rarely, the examples I give, if you take sports as an example, rarely do you see any comeback wins, right? Every now and then you'll see some here and there, but by and large, it's a mission that is not going to be successful. So showing them, and fortunately or unfortunately, as the case may be, there's enough study cases out there that prove businesses that waited too long to react and prepare and plan properly are no longer here. The businesses that were proactive. So it's not me just saying it. I can offer you proof thanks to published research that's out there.
Excellent.
That's the old saying, Ed, real quick, lead, follower, get out of the way.
Yeah, there you go. Let's talk about another relationship, you and your wife. The two of you have together jointly started and exited 7 companies. So whereas your parents, you managed to endure in business, but the relationship broke down, what do you think it is about you and your wife that's making that partnership so successful? And on the flip side, maybe some pitfalls you've learned to avoid.
What I would say made it successful, and my wife retired in 2022. So now here I'm doing this. She's far more evolved than I am. I've tried retiring twice and I just didn't have the emotional whatever to do it. I still like working. I enjoy it every day where she's far more advanced. Let's put it that way. What I would say what worked for us is we knew each other's strengths and weaknesses, both personally and professionally. In most of our businesses, she was the administrative side of the business, whether it was the accounting, the HR, so on and so forth, where I was more the ops, sales, marketing side of the business. So while we knew what each other was doing consistently, I did not dare stick a toe in that water unless she asked me to, or vice versa. We, of course, talked about everything. We were both cross-trained how to do what we needed to do if, God forbid, something happened to one of us. But on the other hand, respecting those boundaries, establishing them early on, and also be willing to say, hey, I don't know how to do this. Do you have any ideas? So I think that really helped us an awful lot in all the businesses. Pitfalls, I don't mean to sound whatever. It's hard for me to really think of any, other than the fact that, listen, when you're in a family business, whether it's a husband, wife, or other family members, I don't care how hard you try, it carries over to everything. Mm-hmm. So look up at the moon. Is it a pretty, oh yeah, by the way, how are we going to onboard a new employee next week? It carries over to everything.
It certainly does. And talking about that, so now as running Gingold Advisors, you serve as a confidential counselor to a number of owners and executives. When it comes to the family-run businesses that you have exposure to, have worked with, or are working with now, what would you say are the most common blind spots that you're tending to focus in on and help them see?
First of all, getting them to realize that they have a terrific business. So many times people come to me, whether it's a family business or an SMB, wherever they're located, and they feel like things are terrible. They cannot see any positivity in what they're doing or how their company's doing. So getting them to accept, if it's true, their company, they have a good foundation. They just need to strengthen it, shore it up, and build on it. And that's always the part about giving them the confidence, the knowledge, and the tools to actually do it and to help them carry through with it. And more times than not, it's just an uncertainty they have because they've lost confidence in themselves.
Interesting. So what about scenarios where you're working with a family business and there is that next generation that wants to participate, wants to be involved in the family business, but doesn't necessarily want to take the reins and lead. When you see that scenario, how do you guide those various family members through that scenario?
You know, what I would tell you to back up just a tad, when Gen 1 started, that was easy. Gen 2 came in and there was no discussion. You just went into the family business. There wasn't a will you, should you. You just, it was expected and you did it. Gen 3 and 4, though, has been a tougher nut, as the saying goes. But most especially, the biggest shift I've seen is after COVID. Because Gen 3 and 4 may want to work in the business or at the business, but they don't want to lead it. They don't want to answer an email at 6:30 in the morning. They don't want to take a phone call at 8 o'clock at night. The work-life balance for them is a real thing. And I don't argue pro or con to that. It is what it is. To answer your question, though, directly, when we get to a point where we cannot fill the roles that need to be filled internally, that's when we have to bring in. I did this recently for someone. I brought in a chief operating officer. I actually started the person as a fractional because I wanted to give Gen 3 and 4, respectively, the opportunity to say, yeah, I'm still committed to, I don't want to run this thing, without the fractional being in a position of, hey, I've got to be, I'm out of here in 6 months, or I'm going to be, I've got to look over my shoulder. They knew going in, hey, this may not last.
And so sometimes, based on that, the right move, or maybe the only move, is to bring in outside leadership. Somebody's going to step in because somebody's got to lead. And if the top executive, it could be the parental figure, is aging out, stepping down, retiring, whatever, and that next generation doesn't want to lead, somebody's got to do it, right?
I give the example of one of my favorite bands from the 80s was Van Halen. And no matter who was in front of the band, it was still a kick butt rock band. Mm. So somebody still has to be the lead singer at the end of the day, to your point. And sometimes you have to go external, like Van Halen did 3 times.
I was actually speaking with another colleague, as I've seen this come up a few times, and I'm not sure if you have too or can comment to it, but family decides, okay, next generation doesn't want that leadership spot. They bring in that outside leader. The outside leader is obviously charged with that continuity of prosperity, which every family business is looking for, and ultimately grow the business. But then in some cases, they get scared. And suddenly that person who, by all indications, is growing the business, hitting the metrics, doing all the right things, finds themselves out of a job. Wondering if you've ever seen that happen and if you could offer any thoughts or perspectives is, what do you think happens in that dynamic? What are they, if they're scared, what are they scared about? What is it that suddenly makes that not okay?
They become scared when they feel like their family business is no longer a family business because an outsider has come in, and that trust thing is hard. One of the analogies I give people is, if you have kids, remember the first time you gave your kid the keys to the car and they went out without you and you sat home sweating? You probably had to change your shirt 3 times and probably just really nervous. So it's tough. This business is your baby and you've turned it over. But usually when I see the scenarios that you describe, Ed, it's because clear objectives were not laid out. It was not, there was not a clear understanding of what was expected of the person and the vision. The outside person has to be able to, it's like a new coach coming into a sports team. They have to run the team the way they feel is going to produce the greatest results. But the owner sets the tone for how the team will conduct itself, how it will run. And more times than not, when you see a failure, it's because all the preliminary steps weren't done ahead of time.
Good point. Good point. Yeah. And it's, I think too, sometimes people want growth, but in order to grow, there's typically change involved, right? You can't keep doing the same thing and expect for an exponentially higher result. So something has to change, right? And change can be very hard, especially for a lot of family governed businesses that we encounter, where not only has the family been there and involved for a long time, maybe multiple generations, so have the people. In some cases, even some of the people are multi-gens, where they're working there and their parents worked there or still are working there. I can imagine in your role, being implementing change has got to be challenging sometimes when you're dealing with that family-governed enterprise.
Oh, for sure. I always tell everybody it's no different than first we crawl, then we walk, and then we run. So if it's not, again, taking those steps in a logical manner is really what brings success. And Yeah, I have clients that have, I have one client, a manufacturing client right now, that they have, I think, their third or fourth generation out on the manufacturing floor. Grandpa started on all throughout because it's a great workplace. So yeah, I see this all the time. But again, you have to put this in order and you have to take the right steps at the right time.
Yeah. And I think sometimes maybe as that leader coming in, tempering the pace of change to some extent and saying, we're not, if you throw too much at this team all at once, they might crack, but just gradually turning the dial and implementing things in a very step-by-step and taking the time to your point, which it is hard. And there are some instances where I've come into a family governed business and I truly feel like an outsider, as though I've almost invaded their space. It's tight in terms of, you're not family, you're not one of us, you're an outsider. I'm like, yeah, I'm an outsider, but I'm here to help. And by the way, I get what you're going through because I'm a second gen myself. But it's definitely, change is hard, and establishing that trust, to your point, which is instrumental, is also challenging, or can be.
Listen, a good leader, first of all, gets buy-in from everybody. That doesn't mean they necessarily agree, but they get buy-in. They understand why it's happening. But also a good leader is a good painter too. They paint the picture of where this is going to be, what the final product will look like. And to your point, just trying to implement change for the sake of change or because we think that's going to bring us massive growth, that is not necessarily and usually not the right answer. To any time you shove something down someone's throat, it's not going to end well. You can increase the business tenfold, but if you've alienated your team, you've really only done more to hurt yourself than help yourself. So being a good leader, painting that picture, getting buy-in, and showing people what you're willing to do to help make it possible, not just sitting back in the corner office and saying, you go do this and you go do that.
So speaking of a scenario where there was rapid growth, you helped and you were instrumental in helping a donut franchise scale from 16 installations to 120 nationwide. So that was some fairly substantial growth. So if you could talk about that experience, Scott, and what did that teach you about scaling fast while protecting what we're talking about, while protecting that culture, while protecting that team and making them okay with that growth?
I'll go back to where we started, which is having constant communication, making sure, I've always been a believer myself, and it always drove my CFO crazy and others, you having more supply than demand so you don't let people down. So being, when you talk about, hey, we want to exponentially grow and we want to do it quickly, having the right people, having the right policies, procedures, systems, and also having the right tools in place, doing all that is what assures, and you're still not, listen, you're still going to have some misses. You're still going to have areas that, hey, we should have done it this way and should have done it that way, which is why I'm a big believer in after action reports over and everything and anything. I do it myself. What could I have done differently? What did we do well? What did we do that we could have done better? Where did we miss? Where did we hit? That was a critical part of that success, is making sure we understood and everyone was communicated with, and there was open channels so people could say, look, this is a problem. You may think this is working, but it's really not.
And that's, I think that's definitely true from what I've observed, is that when a business is structured properly and they grow quickly, they can accommodate the growth, right? They have the resources, they have the systems. But when they're not, it's pretty quick to see communication and systems breaking down and literally almost like crumbling before your very eyes. Whereas they'll get to a point where taking on a new opportunity is no longer exciting. It's, oh God, how are we going to do this? It's a burden. That shouldn't be the case. So what do you do when you see that? Is it when you see a company, they want to grow, they are growing, but they may or may not see the world crumbling around them as they drive for that growth?
I back up the bus a little bit and I start with a conversation. When somebody says they want to grow, I always ask why. Mm-hmm. You're profitable. You're making money. Your employees are well paid. They're well taken care of. You're happy. They're happy. Why do you want to grow? Give me some concrete reasons why you want to grow. I realize being stagnant is not a good thing. I can tell you, my last company before this one, we experienced an average of 28% growth every year by design over a 3-year period. My point, but we knew why we wanted to grow. So many companies that grow or say they want to grow, it's they don't know their why. You have to know the why. It's okay if you only grow 2 to 5% a year, if that's what you want. So that's step one. But step two is, when you're growing like this, is being open to understand that you're going to make mistakes, and you can wallow in it, or you can say, we may need some outside help to counsel us on what we're missing here, because we all get blinders on in our own businesses from time to time. Being open to outside help, whether it's somebody like me on what I do, or somebody like what you do in your world, but also just being open and constantly learning new things. We're seeing technology change in rapid rates right now with AI and things. So understanding you have to, again, adapt, learn, and move forward.
Yeah. And I can see your point about growth and about people's attitudes to growth. You could talk to, by all indications from the outside, a very successful family-governed business, and maybe they've not seen a lot of top-line growth, but they're profitable, their team's strong, their resources and capabilities, their quality is good. And they might say, we're no good, we're not growing. But they say, are you no good? It looks pretty good from here, from this vantage point. And it's more about their own internal feelings about what they want and where they want to take the business. And maybe it's not quite gotten to where they want, but it's not like it's all bad. And sometimes I think there's a tendency to say the glass is very much half empty when you're saying, this glass is not bad. We need to tune up, but all is not lost. So I think sometimes they get lost in that desire to grow and not seeing it, and then just saying, we're no good.
For sure. And that's why I also am very careful about ego growth. Just because all of your friends, or you golf with, or you play tennis with, or you hang out with, they're growing their companies, that's good for them. Everyone has to run their own race. So understanding that, and also grow at a rate that matches your company's capabilities. Again, the worst thing you can do, especially, listen, we're living in very interesting times. We went from work at the office to work from home to now return to office, and all kinds of hybrid things and a different workforce. So you have to balance all that out with your growth expectations too.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times you mentioned peers. You see your peers and what they're doing. Well, you know, I can honestly say there's what and what you don't see. Okay, yeah, that company's growing by all indications at a healthy rate and maybe superseding my growth. However, what, you know, that's what on the outside. What you don't see on the inside is that company's laden with debt and is on the ragged edge every month of making or not making payroll because they're overextended or over leveraged.
Or they don't see the owner that calls me up, or the CEO of an SMB or a president of an SMB calling me up at 2 a.m. crying because they're lost. They are just like so frustrated, and they just don't know what to do. So they don't see that side of it either. Yeah, so yeah, all the points you brought up are extremely valid, but also the other side of it as well, the human side of it.
Yeah. So we see this a lot, and it's come up a number of times on this program. So you're working with a founder, and or it could be the first gen, and maybe there's a second or next gen in the wings, but they're having a real hard time letting go. They can't quite seem to fully let go. So when you see that, Scott, what's the conversation you have when that top executive, who by all indications, part of them wants to turn the reins over, but just can't seem to do it? How do you speak to them, and how do you work through that?
Hopefully they brought me in beforehand so we could lay out a battle plan for them to follow. But when they have it, and this happened not too long ago, and it was 1 foot in, 1 foot out. So I thought about it. And the founder, I came in and said, I literally gave him about 6 typed pages of responsibilities he had moving forward. He said, I don't want to do this. I'm looking to slow down. I'm like, no, because you're still in the deep end of the pool, you know, and based on you, what you're doing, you keep giving mixed messages to your team and your family, not only to the family, but the employees who are the managers, the day-to-day managers. So I'm going to give you 6 pages of daily responsibilities. And he looked at me, he said some choice words, which we won't say here. And it took him 24 hours. He actually started screaming at me. And about 24 hours later, he called me up and he said, I get it. I get it. So then I came back and I gave him 1 page of duties. And they were not necessarily day to day, but these are the areas that you can most help your company protect your legacy and help the next gen. If you buy into that, we're going to have great success.
Yeah. And I've seen it all kinds of ways. I've seen it where the top executive just can't let go. And that next generation has to say, one of us has to go. I'm sorry. And there's also cases where, and I think it's more the latter is what you addressed, is where that top executive will stick around, but they'll stick around in like an advisory capacity, or they'll have very much transferred all of the operational responsibilities and governance of the company to the next generation. And they'll just be there as really something of a brand ambassador, creating some goodwill. Those, I love to see that, because a lot of times, and maybe I'm wired that way, and maybe you are because you tried to retire a few times, you like to work. And for as long as you're physically and mentally capable, why not? As long as there's a role there, why not? You know?
Exactly. It's no different, honestly, Ed, when somebody tells me they want to sell their business and go through all the usual questions and say, okay, let's pretend I'm not a broker or anything, but let's say pretend I was. I sell your business on Friday. What are you doing on Monday? I'm going to play golf. Okay. What are you doing the following Monday? I'm going to play tennis. Okay. What are you doing the next week? Going to go on a cruise. Okay. What happens what are you doing 3 months from now? And there's usually not a good answer. I have a client, a former client now, ophthalmology practice. They sold it. And his wife recently gave him a pretty tough ultimatum. Get a job, start another business, or get a girlfriend, but get out of my house. Seeing you at nights and weekends was cool. This is not working. I have a life outside of what you're doing. In my case, my wife she had a life planned out with our granddaughter doing this and that. She's very fulfilled, happy, she's good. For me, it's just the way I was raised, I guess. I like to wake up with mission and purpose every day, whether that's volunteering, which I do a fair amount of with organizations here, or serving clients. But you have to know, what is your next step? Where are you going to be?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, hopefully our listeners understand the magnitude of that point, that because I've seen it and you've seen it. I've actually seen people sell a business for a very high multiple, big number. In other words, life-changing wealth, right? They don't have to work another day in their life tenfold, right? And they're depressed and they don't have purpose and they don't know what to do. For the very reasons that your wife was wise enough to foresee, is that what is the next chapter look like? What's that going to be? And is it what I want? Versus I'll just figure it out now that I'm at that crossroads, and that's a little too late. And so they go through this phase where they're like, they have to rediscover, what's my purpose? What's my role now? Because I'm no longer the CEO.
I liken it to, as I say, I do a fair amount of volunteering and causes that are close to my heart, one of which is veterans. And veterans will tell you that reentry into the general population is not easy. And going from a structured environment like they had into the general population is tough.
Yeah.
And it's similar, obviously military is far more important and far more worthy of our respect, so on and so forth. But the process is very similar. Reentry into a different life. And if you're not preparing for that reentry, whether it's you stepping down as the leader or whether you are selling the business or in any scenario, you're going to fail personally. And that's the thing. You can be the richest person on the block, but you can also be the poorest when it comes to your mental and emotional health.
Yeah. Yeah. Talking again about the dynamics of the family enterprise, family loyalty can often be a great asset, a great strength. However, in some cases, it can also prevent accountability. How do you help leaders address performance issues when a person in question is also a relative? They're the VP of sales, but they're also my son, right? Or my daughter. So how do you help navigate that when there's a family dynamic but yet they also have to be held accountable to a role?
It comes down to obviously something that we've touched on a few times in this conversation, having the expectations laid out clearly like we would for anyone else. If they're the VP of sales, I expect the company to do this and that in revenue targets and growth, so on and so forth. But oftentimes in a family business, it's not that definitive. But either way, when we get to that point, it's having the private one-on-one conversation and not to the HR department, because I hate when HR departments are called in for this, because they're not going home with that family member having Sunday dinner. So you as the leader have to sit down with that family member and say, look, this is the trend I'm seeing. Not when the bus actually hits the wall. You've got to do it when the bus is swerving. Okay, I'm looking at these reports. I'm seeing the trends. What is our corrective action here? What are we doing why is this going on? How are we going to address it? But when it gets to the point where the bus has hit the wall, that's when we have to have the honest conversation and say, do you really feel you're still the right person to be in this job function? Part of what I do, and it mirrors the EOS thing, and I'm not an EOS implementer, is right people, right seats. That family member might be the right person, but just in the wrong seat. So having that honest conversation is so critical. It's part of the dynamic that has to be addressed.
And it's equally important, I think, that the person on the receiving end of that communication gets that and has. I had one guest, and for a young person, had tremendous, I'll say, emotional maturity. So to the extent that there was a bit of a discussion, it sounded like it was heading towards dispute, and actually had the wherewithal to say, in that case, to his father, are you talking to me as my dad or as the CEO? And that kind of stopped that conversation from going off the rails and brought them back to a business discussion as opposed to an emotional discussion. And that can be tricky when family dynamics are at play. It's very easy to let emotions run high because, let's face it, they're emotional relationships. But I thought that was an interesting, especially for a young fellow, an interesting way to reorient that conversation. You know,
very smart. The other thing that it was part of that, and I don't know about this particular young man, I talk a lot about the hidden family members that nobody talks about. So you have a situation like that where the wife is at home, or significant other, whatever we want to call it, and she or he is not involved in the business, but yet they're chirping in the ear of that family member, and it's poisoning the well, to be frank. And that's one of the things I talk about too. Gen 2, 3, 4, and so on, is you're going to bring this home and you're going to hear input, but you have to remember that person doesn't work in the company. It's no different than if you went out with your buddies or your girlfriends and you sat down and talked, commiserated about things. It's no different. You've got to check that stuff at the door once you walk in the morning.
Yeah. And that's a tremendous insight. And I'm even thinking about in my own circumstance. Yeah, my dad very much ran the business. However, my mother had huge influence in so many different ways and sometimes played a hands-on role. When years ago, when my parents bought the building and renovated it that we're now in, the business, we were so busy. My mother actually ran, she was the project manager. She ran everything. She dealt with all the crazy contractors. She dealt with the interior design. She, down to the smallest detail, she ran that. And when it was done, it was amazing, you know, what she had created. And she did it. And I don't know how she did it. I'd wake up sometimes in the middle of the night and there was mom at the, she had a little office space in the kitchen and she's working on stuff and has plans and blueprints out. I'm like, what are you doing? She's working on the building.
Listen, moms in general are incredible because they can juggle 32 things at one time, especially when raising kids and trying to take care of a family and do all those things, even if they're working full-time themselves. We forget that they are the masters when it comes to multitasking. So good on your mom. And obviously, she should have part of that building named after her, I think.
For sure. So you've mentioned, even in this conversation, sometimes even a CEO getting emotional in front of you, but they're often imparting things to you that they feel maybe they don't have anyone else to talk to. Why would you say it's so critical for family-governed businesses, especially to have some trusted outside voices, outside the family, if you will?
Because there are times when there's certain things that you're just afraid to say to somebody else because you think that you're going to be forever judged based on that conversation, to say, I'm scared. I don't know how to take this company from where we are to where we want to be. I'm struggling emotionally with some of the things going on here, or mentally. So bringing in someone from the outside, if they're truly a third party neutral, that's not going to judge them. I don't judge anybody. I just have a big soft shoulder and a big ear. I listen and I only give input when asked. So when a family, though, you can keep score in families. It's easy for families to do and never let go and remember things forever and a day. So an outsider, they come in, if they're the right outsider, they're keeping it in perspective and able to bring some common sense and also a sense of calm and saying to that person, it's okay you feel this way. You bring that to a family member, they may be, what's wrong with you? What was that movie? I'm trying to remember. Was Cher, where you slap him in the head, but it's wake up. And many families, that's the reality, and it never lets go.
Yeah.
Moonstruck. Yeah. That's the movie.
Yes, Moonstruck. That's it. Yeah. Yeah. There was a guest we had on some time ago who often found himself in the middle of some of these family tricky conversations, let's say. And he was a big advocate, and he had a great message then was speak your mind and do no harm. Because it's very easy to speak your mind.
Age wisdom.
But the do no harm part was huge, because sometimes, and that's when you see families sometimes, hey, not talking to that sibling for 10 or 20 years or whatever, because something was said somewhere that couldn't be walked back or unsaid.
That's why I always encourage family members, if you're going to have that discussion, pick up your smartphone, activate the record button, record yourself saying what you're going to say, and then listen to it. And then ask yourself, would you want to be talked to that? Is this the message you really want to convey? Are you willing to live with the consequences from that conversation?
That's a great piece of advice. That's great. So something else we touched on earlier in the conversation, the emergence of AI and other technologies. From your perspective, Scott, how do you see those shaping some of the businesses, maybe even now or in the near future, that you're working with?
So I see it. I have a love-hate with AI, because I think we're becoming so dependent on AI that we're forgetting what I call the H2H factor, which is human to human. And one of the things I try and tell my clients all the time is, and others for that matter in my network, is never forget to be a politician in a good way. And by that, I mean shake hands, kiss babies, make friends. AI can't do any of that. AI can't sit across from you at a coffee place or over a meal and listen to you, make that eye contact and have a human-to-human conversation to really relate to you. AI is great in the sense of getting greater and deeper knowledge based on what you think, especially when it comes to finances and things along that line. But don't let it replace the human element of your business, because what built your business was the human element. I don't care what business you're in, there is a human element to it. AI is, listen, I tell this story all the time. When I was coming up, we had in school, I remember, and people are going to laugh now, abacus, a slide rule, leather-bound ledger books. And then we went to an adding machine, and then we went to a calculator. And from a calculator, we went to a desktop computer, and so on and so forth with technology. And here we are with AI. But if you look at all the past technologies we've had, it still comes down to H2H, human to human connection. Use these tools exactly as that, a tool. It is not a replacement. It is a tool in the toolbox that you use to improve your business and to deliver a better experience for your clients and customers.
That's a great and healthy perspective. And something, as a company that's fairly immersed in AI, we wrestle with too, is that at the end of the day, did it accelerate that process or not? Did we end up just asking as many questions that we would have done through our own device, or did we, and that we're always testing and weighing and measuring and seeing, is it helping? Is it accelerating? Or is it just in some cases, a clever distraction?
I'd also go back to business number 6 of mine, which was market research. Go back to your clients and customers and say, hey, I don't know if you notice, we've made some changes and some shifts and we're doing this and that. You don't have to necessarily say AI. How has the customer experience been? How are you, what is like, have you noticed any changes, good, bad, or otherwise? If you don't ask, they can't tell. And I always say solicit feedback all the time. He or she who has the most data and information always wins the race.
That's a great point. So if a young family member was at a crossroads, when I was at the crossroads, and a number of people on this show have been at that crossroads, which is, do I join the family business or do I go out on my own? How would you guide them and how would you advise them?
Stick a toe in the water and find out. Listen, my dad wanted me to go into his business. I did it for a minute and we both had the awareness to realize this wasn't meant to be. My son, we built businesses. He didn't want any part of our businesses. He and his wife are very smart and successful entrepreneurs on their own. They built incredible businesses, and the one they have now is incredible. And I would say you have to find that out first to make sure that you can really do it in a family, because it's not only the family dynamic, but do you have a passion for what this business is? you may not have a passion, and money is a terrible reason to do anything. Money's easy. Happiness, fulfillment, and doing something you care about is the tough part.
Yeah.
So going out on your own, I would say, understand your why to do that. Is it because you're afraid to work with family, because you don't really resonate with what the family business is? It doesn't ring a bell for you. Why are you going out on your own? So make sure you answer those questions first.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think a lot of times you also see people enter the family business out of duty or obligation, which I would argue is also not necessarily the right reason.
Yeah, I think we're seeing less and less of that. As I said, it was easy. It was no question for Gen 2. It was just, you did it.
Yeah.
Gen 3 and 4, not so much. I've seen family members step in for the wrong and right reason at the same time. The founder is ill and ill, not going to get better. So they feel an obligation to step in. And that usually doesn't end well in any sense of the word, because eventually the founder passes on. But also now you have a family member in a business that doesn't want to be there.
Yeah.
None of us do well in a situation we don't want to be a part of.
Yeah. In fact, in some companies that I've spoke with where it was a multi-gen situation, it was actually a mandate that, do you want to work here? You have to go work somewhere else first. And we understand that in doing that, you may love what you went and did and never come back.
Yeah.
But we want to make sure that you have that experience so that you have a more rounded view when you do come in of what business is like when you're not part of the family, when you're just, say, an employee. You know,
I have a former in our cybersecurity business, a former client. Their son graduated college. He wanted to go into the business. And instead, he went and they said, no, you've got to go to get a job. And he worked for, I don't want to say the name and promote him, one of the big car rental companies, which was awesome, because if you work for these big enterprises, companies, these big companies, you get a tremendous amount of training in different areas. And he did. Now he's successfully in the family business after being there in that company for 2-3 years. Because he developed more maturity, not that he was immature before, but come right out of college, it takes a minute. But also he got experience in training in other ways, even though the family business is not a car rental business, all the skills he learned carried over, and it's made a tremendous difference.
Yeah, that's something that I've seen and heard a lot. My situation was a little different. My father came to me and said, do you want to come in and buy it? Let me know, and let me know by the end of this weekend, because I got 3 or 4 people lined up to buy it if you don't want to. So
no pressure.
So my situation was, however, in the look back, I most certainly would have benefited from that experience of going out and working in a different firm for a period of time and then coming back in. So if I had the luxury of time, I would have most certainly done that, because I could see the benefits I've spoken with, because they bring all of that knowledge right into the business. And it's infused in the business, and now it becomes part of their dichotomy. And it's usually a great thing and a great asset for the family business.
To your dad's credit, first of all, he gave you the option, right?
Yeah.
That was number one. Number two, he was square up straight with you and said, look, I've got other people. If you don't want it, no harm, no foul, but I've got to do what I've got to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I respected that and took the weekend, thought about it, recognized that a lot of my peers, a lot of friends who had recently graduated were going into very low-level jobs, or some of them going back to school for a graduate study or something. And I said, hey, I'm 22 years old and I'm about to pass on business leadership. Maybe I shouldn't do that. Maybe I should give it a try, to your point, which is a great perspective, by the way, I think sometimes we as that next generation have the weight of the world on our shoulders when, let's face it, you're young. Typically, when you're a second gen looking to step into a business, you're in your 20s or maybe early 30s. Life is still ahead, and try it. And if it works out, great. And if it doesn't, okay. It's okay. It's okay to try and say, hey, this is not a good fit, and go another way. But often worth it to try and see.
No one wants regrets. I don't know anyone who is well served on their deathbed saying, I wish I did this. I wish I did that. Buy the ticket, take the ride. It's pretty simple.
Yeah. Yeah. Last question for you, Scott. If anyone listening wants to connect to learn more about you, more about the work you're doing and your advisory, what's the best way for them to connect?
So I live on LinkedIn, Scott Gingold, all one word, no spaces, no dashes, no anything. I live there, so you can find me there pretty much every day, multiple times. I post all the time. The website, which is there, but under reconstruction, should be up new, but it's there right now, the current one, gingoldadvisors.com. And that's probably the best way to connect with me. I'm here, there, and everywhere.
Awesome. Awesome. Scott, thank you so much for sharing your insights and your experiences. Your story highlights the power of perspective, empathy, and courage in guiding family-governed businesses through growth and transition, as well as guiding some yourself. Again, we've been speaking with Scott Gingold of Gingold Advisors, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Scott, thanks so much for joining us today.
The pleasure was mine. Thanks so much for the opportunity and having me on as a guest today. Much appreciated.
Awesome. Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.